Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So are you having brunch with your mom this Sunday, or are you just going to check in with her Facebook page? Or are you a parent who has already sent your children several text messages about what your expectations for this Sunday are? Well, Facebook may be associated with the young, but it's also becoming a lifeline for the old. My guest now is Michelle Slatala. She texts. She Twitters. She video conferences. She writes the Cyber Familius column for the New York Times. She's also the author of The Town or Beaver Creek, the story of a lost Kentucky community, published a couple of years ago, which is about her mother's hometown. And it probably also bears mentioning, given what many of us will be doing on Sunday, that she and her husband co-write mystery novels, and one of them is called Mother's Day, a novel of suspense. And I'm guessing that you probably shouldn't use it as your blueprint for this weekend. Right, Michelle?
No, I think in that one, small children get kidnapped and whisked away. It was kind of a fantasy because at the time we had a lot of toddlers, and it was the only way we could conceive of getting any peace.
We were inspired to talk to you after hearing that some people are building Facebook groups around their older and more isolated family members. Are you familiar with that trend?
Yeah. In fact, it's a great thing to do for older homebound people who have a hard time getting out or maybe don't drive anymore but want to still stay connected with friends and family.
How do people use it? For what kinds of things?
Well, if you set up a Facebook account for your grandmother and then you friend her, make her your Facebook friend, whenever you upload photos of what you're doing or what other people who are her friends are doing, she can go onto her account and she can see them right there on her screen. They just appear seamlessly. She doesn't have to go off to some other website and download them or log in somewhere else. She can see what you're doing on a daily basis because you can put in your status. You can say, you know, I'm on my way to school. I should be on my way to school, but I'm sleeping in. I should be on my way to school, but I'm sleeping in, and I'm okay with it because I already called myself in sick, pretending to be my mother, that kind of stuff. And so she can know on a day-to-day basis, on a minute-by-minute basis, what you're up to, and she can let you know what she's up to by updating her own status. Because when you're on Facebook, you get this constant feed of information about what the other people who you're connected to are doing. And so you can feel like you're part of a group, you're interacting with people without having to actually physically go out and do it.
Which I guess raises the question, given the kinds of things that people generally talk to their friends about on Facebook, do I really want my mom as a Facebook friend?
My question is, do I really want my kids as a Facebook friend? Because they're always chastising me. They're saying, you shouldn't be doing that. Why are you reading that book? Do you have any idea that other people can see this?
Right. It's a public thing.
It works both ways.
It's a public. Do people ever set up different Facebook groups so that they have sort of, you know, one where they interact with their friends and one where they interact with their families?
You don't have to do that because Facebook actually has very sophisticated privacy settings that you can calibrate for your account. So I have a 17-year-old daughter who will give me access to her profile page, but she won't let me see the notes that her friends write on her wall, mm-hmm. on her profile page, whereas another daughter gives me access to everything that's going on with her account. And you can fine-tune it so that you can let some friends see everything, some friends see a few things, some friends see nothing, and if friends annoy you, you can block them completely, and they're totally unaware of your online existence.
How difficult do you find it to be to introduce elderly people to Facebook or the internet itself, for that matter, if they actually haven't gone online before? I mean, it's such a great opportunity for a social network. It's called social networking, which sounds like this new thing, but, you know, for an isolated person, social networking is exactly what they need in their life if they're in that category of elderly homebound, especially. But I hear all these commercials for these super dumbed-down email-only computer hookups, you know what I'm talking about, for older folks who can't get their minds around really going online. How much of that how much is an obstacle? How much is that an obstacle?
I think it isn't really an obstacle, and I think that we don't give old people, and by old people I mean anyone over the age of 18, the credit they deserve for being able to understand technology and how it works. I mean, you can basically say to someone, sit here, type, and you're talking to other people. And the technology, the tools that we use to do that have become increasingly more seamless, easier. We don't have to jump through the same hoops that we used to 5, 10, even 2 years ago to be online and connect to other people using technology. It just gets easier and easier. Pretty soon, it's going to be as easy as using a toaster, which I think is what we want.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something we can all understand. But I actually think about this a lot because I had a great uncle who was homebound, and he was in his late 70s, and he lived in the mountains of eastern Kentucky, isolated from everyone. He had a hard time speaking from strokes. He had a hard time moving around. I sit here in Northern California, thousands of miles away, and I needed to get everything that was in his memory about his childhood for this book that I was writing about my family in Kentucky a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to know everything that happened to him in the 1930s. And he, because he had a computer and an internet hookup, would sit in his home in Floyd County, Kentucky, and for hours we would type back and forth to each other. And he would answer any question I would ask,
yeah.
And he would write long, compose long statements and long answers, and he would answer any tiny little picky detail that I would ask.
Right,
it was
that's
a way
great.
Of, and he looked forward to it because it was a way for him to share these stories and these memories. He really could not verbalize them anymore because
of his
he had
stroke.
A hard time talking and organizing
yeah.
his thoughts.
You know, in the John Hockenberry Second Life interview that we excerpted before, another part of that was the co-founder of Second Life talking about how this has become a big thing among stroke victims because people who can't go out so easily and have conventional interaction can set up these avatars, these kind of virtual selves, you know, in these virtual interactive communities that are online and at least feel like they're having some kind of an interactive life with other human beings.
They are. They're having conversations. They're having relationships. They're kind of plugging into what friends and family are doing, even though they're not seeing them in person and participating physically.
Cell phone companies are now so invested in texting that some of them even offer how-to seminars for parents. Did you know that? AT&T publishes an online guide that teaches parents how to text messages like CYR space MA. CYRMA, yes, it's call your mother, or DBL84DNR, which means don't be late for dinner. Is this just a fancy way to harass your kid? You know, it's parental hovering 2.0.
Well, it is very amusing to harass your child in this way because they find it very irritating when you try to text using their text acronyms. And they find it even more irritating if you make up your own acronyms and act like they're in the vernacular and they should know them. So I do that quite a bit to annoy my teenagers.
And do they annoy you back in some unique generational way?
They rely on the traditional teenage forms of irritation. Coming in late, taking the car without telling me, not doing the dishes. They have all that to fall back on, their time-honored traditions.
I guess so, in the real face-to-face world. Michelle?
The technology makes parents have the power to irritate their teenagers more now.
Michelle Slatala texts and Twitters and video conferences and writes the Cyber Familias column for the New York Times. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
By the way, our video picks this week include a really funny, creepy one about what if we interacted in real life the way we do on Facebook. It'll definitely make you laugh and cringe. Go to WNYC.org and click on video. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.